Cover me. Cover me. Dumb. It's not woo woo. It's woo.
Gears of War voice time.
Now if I ever make a video game, I can just use that.
I want to make... Have you heard of Skin Tigger? The video game, or like, not the band.
I've heard of the band.
Yes. Oh, that's right. So Tigger's Revenge is the video game, and it's basically stylized like Gears of War. I want who does Gears of War, whatever, whoever does Gears of War, I want them to get the rights from Disney to make like a 100-acre woods themed Gears of War game. So you're Tigger in retirement, like he used to fight in the Civil War, and he's like in retirement, and now someone rings on his doorbell, and when he opens it up, it's a flaming pile of poo. Bear.
Oh no.
So they leave. So Christopher Robin and his friends leave a flaming pile of poo bear on his porch. So Tigger, basically the whole game is like tracking down Christopher Robin. So like all the in between bosses are all his friends that he like tortures and fights to get more information about Tigger. And also a little bit of God of War in there. I think at the end you find out that Tigger like banged Christopher Robin's mom. And then Christopher Robin was actually born, so it's like his son.
A twist.
Yes. But the death scene is the greatest, right? So you have like you can do like power up mode, so you can like go into beast mode when you get a few kills. And you like drop your guns and you like rip around on all fours and like rip people and you can like spring. Oh, he's on the Oh, he's sniffing the mic. Good boy. You're on the throne. Look at the way he's mounting that throne. He probably thinks it's another doge. That is so cute. You're talking. Are you talking with me? We're all getting pictures. One picture. Hold on, listeners.
This is going to be the cover of the podcast episode. The thumbnail. Do podcasts have thumbnails?
Sometimes they don't. You have like a cover to your whole thing. You might be able to do per episode. Anyway, so you get like you can do use his spring, you know, like Tigger bounces off his like his thing. They look big and buff and ripped or whatever. You can use like the spring kill, like spring kill on them. And so at the end, you like fight Christopher Robin, and he's on the ground like dead. And it's just like, you know, the tap A indicators on the screen, like tap A, tap A, tap A, and he's like bounce, 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 and you bounce higher and higher, and you're just like you're just mashing A, and you bounce. Eventually, you, like go into the atmosphere, and you get high enough, you're, like you peek out of the atmosphere for a second, and you curve down, you go faster, and you hold out your fist, and then you smash into Christopher Robin's body, and it just like goes all white and classic, like you can't tell what's going on, and it just clears, and just bits of his body are broken and smashed everywhere.
It could be a DLC.
It's been my dream. I'm pretty sure I told Lauren the entire, like, you got the short version.
Did it come to you in a dream?
Tigger's Revenge. I can't remember. I just always thought it was funny. And then Piglet, like, so the two main guys, like you know, you have Marcus Fenix and Dom. The Dom is Piglet, and he's like actually like a warthog with a big ring. Sweet. He's like Piglet, and at near the end, like one of the end battles, like he's dying. He's like, "Use me, it's over!" And so he just like slam your gun into the back of Piglet and like shoot, and then his body like spreads and opens up over yours as you shoot, and you just run through and keep fighting. And then so Christopher Robin uses a whole army of zombie poo, so he kills Pooh Bear, but he like raises up zombie poo. So you get like they throw like they're like poo, and they throw like big buckets of honey, and you get hit, and you're like poo. And you have to like crawl on the ground, and then like this one scene, you're walking through the 100-acre woods, and you get to this clearing, and Piglet's like weasels, and they're like dodging through the grass. You're like ah, like chainsaw. Basically, I really wish
you
it could
exist.
I have put a lot
of thought into this.
So
who
thought.
Do you want to like buy the game?
Children.
People that like Winnie the Pooh, or the people that like that more like violent video game.
It's
the Winnie the Pooh crowd, you know?
Probably like furries. I feel like furries also like weird violent stuff.
You could sell that game to Disney, like, you know, be like, Disney, you should take this route.
I mean, they're taking the Star Wars route. That's pretty brutal, so.
Oh yeah. Well, Paul's with us now.
Yeah, I just walked in.
Should we introduce our guest?
Did you not introduce the guest
yet?
No,
we've just been chatting.
No, yeah.
Okay. So our guest today is very special. He's an interesting guy that we wanted to bring on the podcast just because, you know, we were talking about what the podcast is, and it's, I think, you know, getting to know somebody new each episode. You know, we want to just kind of spread our belief that everybody has a story to tell. Everybody has stories that make them who they are. So, you know, today Tom's going to tell us stories that are kind of like, tell us who he is. You know, so I think like right off the bat, you're 23. Yeah. You just graduated college with a degree in, I don't know what, you can tell us all about
communication studies and writing, because it was humanities, and at least the way that Western Oregon University does it is you kind of pick, I think they literally called them focus areas. You're like focus area A and B, not necessarily one and two, because it's superfluous. I've seen multiple times communication on top, writing on bottom, writing on top, communication studies on bottom.
Okay, I've always wondered that.
But yeah, so if you do humanities, you pick two focus areas in, I guess, specifically the liberal arts college. So you could be philosophy and literature, you could do writing and sociology, you could do, yeah.
Well, how do you even know what you want to do? Just, I mean, doesn't it kind of like evolve over time?
Yeah, it does evolve. I feel like, at least for me, and the vibe that I got from the teacher that helped me, whatever they call them, like counselor.
Advisor.
Advisor, yeah. I mean, she was a teacher, but she became my advisor. Mm-hmm. Like, the vibe that I got from her was that most people, like, do the humanities so they can actually graduate, because they end up getting screwed by whatever program they had, or they do learn what they like, and humanities, you kind of, like, you don't really set up your program, but it's a lot more straightforward. Like, if you pick writing, like, for me, writing and communication studies, every class I had to take was writing and communication studies. Whereas when I was an English major before, there was a lot of different classes, which I liked having the variety and seeing all the different classes. But it's definitely way more focused once you do humanities.
I kind of hear that when people like don't know what they want to do. They just become a communications major and then they can graduate. They've just been there and then they can just like pretty much put anything together for you and call it a communications degree.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to do writing, so I was in the English track. So, you know, English, writing, and then I switched to humanities, two focus areas, writing, communication studies. So I can't remember, like, I could have done, like, I was pretty close to linguistics, but there was like a several series, and communication, I could literally graduate the fastest if I did communication as my second one. And I, you know, did one term over my fourth year, so I was pretty ready to get out. And so I was really pleased being able to have writing as one of my majors, like it is, you know, like.
Yeah. Now that you're done, like, what do you want to do? What do you want to use it for? How do you want to? What do you want to do next? Do you want to use it? You just got a degree now.
How's it feel to be done?
Yeah, I do want to use it. And the feeling that I get from being done right now, like the first, I finished December 11th, and so I had Christmas break, and then my Christmas break just hasn't ended. And so after the first term, and I was gone winter, and then now in spring, I actually kind of miss school.
Really?
Yeah, like being able to be in classes and learn and be connected. Like, I still go and work out with you every day at the school, and so that's cool, but that was like, you know, that's like 1% of what you can do out of college. So,
getting yoked.
So you really enjoyed the social aspect of it, and the, you know, the learning.
Did you even have any friends at school? Like,
not. I met a lot of people. I only, you know, got like a few numbers or saw people outside of class, but you have like, especially like in my Spanish class, when you go there every single day, you have friends that you.
Yeah, it's being involved.
Like friends, you know, like you both know, like this friendship's going to last, you know, 3 months or whatever, and then you move on with your lives, but.
Well, you critique each other's work and you, like, you know, help each other do the same project.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a little different in the music department. Like, we're a family, and I'm gonna know these people my own whole life. Yeah, because like,
and you can collaborate and stuff.
Yeah, we just connections.
Yeah, which, like, I didn't like. I did pretty bad about the collaboration. Like, the guy that I work with at the bakery, he has a friend that, like, he just directs and does movies, just small time or whatever, and he came in and. So he kind of collaborated more, you know, he did the acting thing, he dropped out, but, like, I didn't really collaborate with other writers, but I didn't really feel like you had to. I guess I had one class where they made you get, like, a writer's group, like the legendary, you know, like, Faulkner's and David Thoreau and Emerson, you know, get together and drink scotch and talk about writing or whatever. I had one class where the teacher really wanted us to do that, but other than that, I felt like writing was a very individual field.
Yeah, unless you're like writing for like a sitcom or
a
movie or something.
But even that, like, you know, each writer just has his own job. Like, you're in a team, but you don't really need to enable to write for a sitcom. You don't need to collaborate with four other people. And, like, I mean, I guess if you're pitching something, but I mean, it does, like, I have thought about that, like, you know, like, collaborate with another person, but I have no experience, like, writing something with someone else, like, how that would be to share, like, your words as ideas. Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot, like.
Yeah, it's kind of like writing music, I guess, you know, it's like, you write the song, and then most of the time, it's one person writing the song, and they teach it to the rest of the band. And,
right.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird feeling.
It gets written that way, and like, then there's some input and some changing and stuff, but like, the song was already a song. Like,
you at some point have to be like, all right, guys, I wrote this. Everybody listen. Yeah. But
you know, you can do it collaboratively the whole way.
Yeah. And I mean, like,
it'd be fun.
The most part, I guess, like with my friend or whatever, like, we just talk about funny things and then we come up with like different funny things, just like riffing off each other for fun. But then, you know, it usually comes down to one person to actually put it into writing. And I never, like I said, to bring back, I never collaborated with any other writers in the department. Like, right now I'd just be friends, or I'd have to find somebody random. Like, I kind of like, I lost that opportunity, I guess, like, leaving college. Like, there's no other student. Like, what do you do? Put a Craigslist app up or ad up, or you'd have to recruit one of your friends that you already know and be like, hey, you should be a writer. Let's collaborate.
Well, how's it different? Like, how's college different than what you expected it to be?
It was a lot easier than I expected it to be. I mean, it was harder in some instances, but I mean, almost like any experience I've ever had, you just imagine, like, if you haven't done something before, you don't even know how it's possible in your mind, because your mind can't even manifest, like, what's going to happen. Like, 4 years, I'm going to take these classes. I have no idea what classes I'm taking, and I don't know the teachers. You have no idea about the assignments. But, yeah, it was a lot easier. I mean, not like just like the work, because like the work's hard, but like,
yeah, showing up is the hardest part.
Yeah, I guess, like, what I'm saying, like, it's possible, and it's hard to, it's like you see everyone going to college, and I got good grades in high school, but I think the thing that a lot of people think, if they're like me, is just like, you know, is it possible? Can I, you know, like, am I gonna go to college and just be the one that screws up while everyone else does it, you know, even if I try? But I learned, like, if you do try, you're not going to get screwed over. Like, you can get screwed over by registrars or the department, but like, in class basis, you're not going to get screwed over.
Well, did you do 2 years of community college first?
Yeah, I did 2 years of community college first. That was a big one. Every time I tell people, like,
maybe was that why it was easier?
Oh yeah, I think so. And I've talked to some people that go straight to the 4-year college, and there's so many options. They haven't picked a track. They haven't picked a major. So it's just like diving into the Ganges River, like, as opposed to starting out at the Y. You know what I mean? Like, when you're learning to swim. So it's like, oh, I can, you know, go from the shallow end to 15 feet. I can swim all day, you know, all weekend when it's sunny, whereas, you know, like, you just throw into a river and it's like, I'm just going to start pedaling, and you land on some random island or whatever. This is the weirdest metaphor I've ever said in my life.
Yeah, but the metaphor is kind of extreme.
It is pretty extreme. But I mean, like, control here. It is like that. Like, you are out of control, though. Yeah. You are out of control. And I mean, I'm bringing it, you know, all together just as I go, as I'm thinking, like,
got to get out of control.
It is like a river. Like, it is taking you, you know, time is progressing. You go into college, you know, you're going downstream, your freshman year is over, and it is taking you somewhere. Like, there's a lot of things you can't control about college, and most of them are just like time and just circumstance and chance.
Disease, like the Ganges. And
yeah.
Life is like a river.
Yellow cloud.
Life is like the Ganges, right?
Life, I mean, is time Jeff is flowing Bridges, by. Life's rivers.
It's not going to stop. By. Like, where do you want to
right.
be at the end of the river?
Right.
Did you take any, like, fun art classes or anything?
I took a lot of art classes. I took, like, six. No, gosh, six. I took, like, 4 out of 6 or 7 art classes my last term at community college. Yeah, I did a lot. I had actually had so much. I was pretty close to being able to just do an art minor. But, yeah, the other thing I didn't say earlier is I was also able to do a writing minor as well. So when I switched to humanities, I could do writing minor and writing major, and so I ended up having way more of a focus in writing from switching from, like, the normal English is what someone would think about. But yeah, I was pretty close to being able to have an art minor. I just had to do a lot of lab classes, and those take time, and they only offer so many that I would have, you know, had to stay in longer. But I love the art classes. Art classes are super interesting. I mean, I loved every class. I didn't take figure drawing. I did the first intro to drawing.
Draw, like, the nude people?
No. No. You have to take the first one, and then you take the figure drawing. And I took the first one my last term, and so I graduated. Is anybody going to mention why this is funny?
Don't do it.
No, but I've seen some of your drawings, and, like, I don't know. It seems like that's kind of a fun thing to take in college, because, like, a lot of people that I know that take, like, those kinds of classes, like, start out thinking, like, oh, this is how I draw. But then it's like, you do all sorts of stuff that's like, but that's not how I draw, because you're supposed to, like, learn how to, like, kind of expand your skills. But at the same time, you're breaking down the walls that you've built up, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I wonder if it's kind of the same with almost anything that you do in college. Yeah. Is like, you got to break down the walls of things that you've already thought you knew, and then, like, let new things enter that in the beginning feel messier.
It's exactly how it is with music.
Oh god, yeah. No, every discipline class I've had, like, I mean, obviously if someone just walks into a chemistry class and never did chemistry, they're not gonna be like, but this is just how I do chemistry. Like, you know, like, people have more opinions about, you know, if they liked to draw and then they went to college and they did a drawing class and, like, but I like to hold it in the writer's grip. And it's like, no, you don't. Like, don't hold it like that. You're an idiot. Like, but oh gosh, the experience I had with that actually wasn't in my art class. There were a few people, like, the first week where it's, you know, like, you're standing at an easel, or you're kind of like, you know, you're in a very upward poised position on a stool, and you have your arm out in front of you, and it's your palms up, and you're moving your whole arm, and there were, you know, a few people that are trying to, like, resist that or say, like, oh, you know, but I can already draw really good like this. But the biggest, the craziest one I had is a girl actually, like, cried and fought with the teacher. And then he, like, finger pointed, like, I'm seeing you after class.
Why'd she get in trouble?
It was in a poetry class. And she pulled the whole, well, this is just how I write poetry, or this is just what I do, or this is how I write, or whatever. The classic, crap.
Why is this any worse than how you're saying
the classic? I don't, like, apparently no one knows why you're in college because you know everything scenario.
But, what a classic.
Yeah.
This ties into why I never saw the movie Deadpool. Is she wrote a poem about Deadpool, and this was before, I mean, I heard the name Deadpool here and there. I have nerdy friends, but this was, like, I think almost 3 years. No, maybe like 2.5 years before the movie came out. So I don't think, I had never even heard about it. I don't think anyone had heard about
the movie really coming out.
Yeah, she was. Yeah. Well, she was into all of them. So this was the third superhero poem she had written. third in a row. So
third superhero poem? Yeah.
In the class. Gross. So it's a workshop. You bring a poem. Everybody reads it in the class.
She likes superheroes.
Yeah, we talk about it. So for the third week in a row, her third one was Deadpool. And this time, the teacher made a comment. And, after she read it and we're workshopping, and they're supposed to be silent. So that was part of the reason why he kind of got mad is or, you can answer questions here and there. But you're supposed to let people talk it through. Because you can get valuable information, letting them talk it through and seeing how they can discover your poem. Yeah, when they're workshopping your poem. So we were workshopping her poem.
Which means what? I don't know.
Which part? Oh, workshop?
Yeah.
It's just like any workshop class in college is you have a skill of any kind. You could have a music workshop class where you come in, like a lyrics class, say. Someone comes down and it's, four people's turn for the class period. They read their lyrics and then everyone is reading and following along and just the group discusses the lyrics. In this case, the poem, we discuss the poem, we discuss the word choices, the sentences, just everything about it. And we workshop it. We suggest things. And it's just getting like massive instant audience, teacher peer feedback mm-hmm. on one person's focus. So you can do like six people maybe in an hour long period, depending on the poem and length of discussion. But so it was her turn. She read it. So we're all going around. A few people started out, with the I think you should have fuck yeah, chimichangas not in all caps because it's a little loud. No, she literally had that in her poem. It was like, I'm Deadpool. Fuck yeah. Chimichangas. Awesome. Just weird random words.
I think that's kind of how Deadpool talks in the comic probably is kind of.
Yeah, probably. That's humor. Yeah, well, that's the defense she used. But anyways, so she did it in what you call slam poetry. So it's like, say I have this poem. If I had anything to read, I'd read it. I'm trying. Because I can't make up words in my mind.
Here's a rap. This will work.
You just have a rap sitting here? People are not going to think that this is real. They're going to think we staged this.
Like, a rap from
out
arms.
On the river, I'm feeling it's plow.
What?
Flow, I think.
Oh, flow. Oh,
it's plow.
wonders where this raft we will row. It's, you're performing it. And it's, right. The poetry that we were learning. So this is, let's get into it. This is where the teacher was critiquing her and where things went wrong. So he stopped her and he's like, during the workshop, he's like, so, this is your third superhero poem. He looks around at everyone. He's like, so I just want you guys to know, I've said this about a few other ones. He's like, for this class, we're writing a kind of poem that, could be in the New York Times, or you're going to be in, the LA Journal or, Poetry Today, something for the more average modern reader.
He's like, on your Tumblr.
Yeah. He's like, don't get me wrong. He's like, you can go to a library, you can find any kind of anthology or some, guy who wrote poems about superheroes or he writes poems just about stars or whatever. Like you can find, any, there's a place for any poem. He's like, but just for this class, what I want you to do and for me to be able to teach you and help you make better poems is to write something that's more tailored for like a wider audience, the wider audience. He's like, so next time, can you just write something that, could be in the New York Times, something that's, I want to see you or whatever. And then that's when she's just like, but this is just how I write. This is me. And he, like really defensive already instantly. He's like, what is it about you? Like, how is this you? And she's like, well, I just really like Deadpool. So. And he's like, chimichangas? Like,
it's like you screamed chimichangas. Yeah,
chimichangas? She's like,
point.
And then that's what she's like, that's just what he says. Like, he's vulgar, like, that's just how it is. And so to quickly tie this to why I didn't see the Deadpool movie is because anytime I ask someone there's been a lot of Marvel movies out there. And like, no, you don't get it. Like, he's really vulgar. And I was like, yeah, I heard that. He's like, yeah, but that's just how he is. And I just hear the scenario of this girl screaming and crying.
It's ruined
just,
for me too.
Yeah,
yeah, ruined for me too.
Exactly.
I don't ever want to see it. It's the first R-rated superhero movie. Right. So,
Besides Captain America,
Captain America's R-rated?
Wasn't there like a 90s Captain America R-rated? Or no, there's gotta be, but you're right, like big time, like.
I mean, recently, you know.
If they could do the Hulk without making that R-rated, you know, it's like, it's just kind of expected, I think.
Well, his pants don't rip.
Yeah. It would be really R-rated if his pants, like, realistically ripped clean off and he was a huge nude monster.
Well, I'm glad to think.
Just ripping people to shreds, too.
Yeah, I haven't met that. Even my best friend was saying, like, but that's how he's supposed to be. Like,
I guess The Watchmen is probably R-rated.
That feels like a different class.
I don't think it's not a Marvel or DC.
It's more like it's more like Guardians of the Galaxy kind of like level, like not many people knew about it kind of thing. Well, I guess dead people, not many people knew about it. But yeah, that argument of like, oh, it's vulgar, like, so? And you know, that along with this experience, I can literally not think but this girl and she about anything but besides this girl, and she drives me nuts thinking about it. So it goes, so it doesn't stop. So she's like, well, that's just how he is, like chimichangas, and he's like, you know, is, and then this, you know, he's really good. He's like, you know, is somebody gonna be able to get that doesn't know him? You know what I mean? He's like,
right,
say this was in the New York Times, like I said, we're not doing slam poetry or performance poetry. They're just reading it silently, you know, in a library or in their room or on the bus. How are they gonna know that this is how it's supposed to be? They're just gonna be thinking they're, you know, like, you know, this is how it goes. He's like, I am Deadpool. Fuck yeah. Chimichangas. Oh yeah, you're dead now. Like, how are they gonna get your whole poem, like the what if, like why does this poem exist, is hinging on the fact that people already know who Deadpool is and you have to perform it in a weird way for them to also get your poem.
Yeah.
And so his argument was completely valid, but she was just hung up on instantly being defensive, thinks that he's just like slamming superheroes or, I mean, I don't know, you know, who knows, but.
And you said she cried?
Yeah, she like started crying. She tore the, like, oh gosh, she tore the poem up.
Whoa.
She tore the poem up, and this is what made him mad. She's like, you know what? It's just fucking stupid. Like, no, I'm done. Like, rip the paper up. And he's like, that's it. I'm seeing you after class. Like that, like, and she like instantly stopped down.
Really?
And so that was like middle school status. Like, I've never seen a college professor do that. Wow. Like,
yeah,
no, he did not like the defacing of art. Like, he wasn't dissing it, you know, but despite saying that it wasn't for this class and that, you know, it's not the right thing and it wasn't coming across, like, he didn't like that she tore it up and threw a fit. And she was, you know, arguing with him for a long time. He finally got fed up.
If you can't take, you know, constructive criticism, then you can't really learn, you know, past a certain point, especially, like, exactly, with a class like that.
Yeah.
So he was probably, I think what really was, he was trying to say, like, hey, I'm trying to teach you something. And she's like, but I'm doing it this way. And he's like, but I'm trying to teach you this way. And essentially she's like, but I'm doing it this way. And he's like, look, you're missing the point. So like, really, they weren't even arguing about the actual, like,
the same thing,
the poem. They weren't talking about the poem. They were talking about what you're supposed to be getting out of the class.
Right.
And which I feel like that probably happens in college frequently to students who don't have the idea of, like, this may not be the way I even end up doing it at the end. She could graduate that entire school and write her poems that same exact way. But, you know, you have to learn different ways if you want to be good at something.
Yeah, I always thought of it, like, after that day, I thought about it a whole bunch. And kind of what I concluded was, often it's really smart people that get in her situation. Mm-hmm. I've noticed, like, people that get all A's in high school, they do really good, you know, they're valedictorian, and, you know, their parents recognize it, they praise them for it, and they have the ability to then rely on themselves to figure out different situations. They can rely on themselves to, you know, figure, you know, the type A, you know, A student personality to, like, figure out different things, that they trust themselves, and they should because they're smart, but then they get this point in college where they have to still trust that there's more to learn, you know, like the level that they're at, you know, sure, it was good for middle school and it's good for high school, but, you know, you're just going to plateau there if you don't stop and say, you know what, no matter how good I was in the past, how easy and smart, you know, I could be about any new things or stuff, I got to stop now and listen to people who have been around more, just listen to people I even think that I may be smarter than, to then be smarter, you know, if I do want to learn, if I do want to be better myself. And that's kind of like, where it's like, you know, gosh, I feel sorry for her. She's paying money She's probably smart. She probably, you know, gets a lot of people and friends that like her poems. But she's not stopping for 5 seconds to hear what this professor has to say to then go home and write her Deadpool poem even better.
Yeah.
She, like, ruined that opportunity. Like, she could write that superhero poem book, but she's not going to, it's not going to reach as many people. It's not going to be as good or better than a lot of people because she didn't take advice. Because she was, probably pretty good in high school, like I said, and got this far. But, how do you take the next step without at least admitting that you have something to learn?
Yeah, you got to trust that the professor has a lot to teach you, but he's trying to teach the whole class. And so it's a little generalized. Maybe everything he says isn't going to apply to you perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
But you got to try and, let that stuff slide so you don't waste everyone's time and, take what you can from it,
Did I make your podcast explicit, by the way? Or can you get like one F word if you're...
No, we have to put the explicit
it's
label.
It's already explicit.
Oh, okay. Chris Redford.
We can cut that out later, right?
Our intro
I was... I will have you know I was quoting her directly.
That's fine. Our intro is actually the F word just like really spanned out. Like, it's a whole minute. Just straight up. You don't know it because we have it so distorted, but it's actually just...
Yeah, I took a sample of the F word and turned it into a harmonica.
That's gonna be your new. We did an intro, me and my friends, when we were in high school. We made our little short film called "One Flew Over Vietnam," and so it was about a bunch of old Vietnam vets in a cuckoo's nest. One flew over a cuckoo's nest, and the intro was just like, I think I was just. Strumming the head of the guitar, like where they get the white piece, the bridge piece or whatever on the top of the guitar that they then branch out to each tuning knob.
White
and so if
piece,
you stroke it, nut. Yeah, stroke it, show them what it sounds like. It's
oh,
ding,
I see.
Ding, ding. Yeah, no, just keep doing that. Ding, ding, ding. Hey. Time to get your pills. Time to get your pills. That was basically our theme song right there. I was leading up to describing it, but it's a lot better to just sing it.
Wow.
Why were we talking about that? Oh, the intro, the weird intros. Yeah, that was our weird intro to our little video.
Anyway, let's talk about the little critter that's running between my legs right now.
Ooh, Kongi, man.
We don't have to talk about that, actually.
I think that's the whole reason we got Tom on here.
That is true. I can tell the story of how I got him, because that was pretty intense.
Wait, yeah, let's talk about
your dog. We're talking about is this cute dog called Shiba Inu.
He's a cream Shiba Inu, so the white ones.
Even more
rare. So what should
rare.
People
I actually don't know what the normal ones are called.
Well, you should describe him physically,
so
in vivid detail.
If you've seen that movie about the guy, the Japanese guy that left his dog at a train station and then died, and the dog stayed there, and there's a statue of it, that's Shiba Inu, if you have any memory of that.
Is that what Balto's based off of?
No, Balto's, isn't he like a husky or something?
Yeah.
Dogecoin, so Doge. I am a Doge master. Sometimes people are like, oh, you have a Doge? I'm like, no, I have a Doge. Dogecoin is an actual currency that you can buy and trade online, if people know that. Or you can just type in Doge meme, and it's that kind of fat-cheeked wolf. Like they're small, they're like 30 pounds most, like small wolf kind of looking thing, but they have really squishy cheeks and their eyes kind of like, you can't see what I'm doing, but... Yeah, they're those little fat Japanese fluffy dogs.
His ears
I have a white
point
one,
up.
Which are pretty rare.
He looks a lot like your friend Garrett.
Yeah, apparently he looks exactly like my friend. And the white ones, so we had a friend that spent 2 years in Japan or 1 year in Japan. And she saw Kong and was like, oh, wow, like I didn't see any white ones when I was there. So like all of them have the classic...
Orange,
yeah, and I don't even know
they
the
look
color
like little
is.
Foxes. He looks like a white little fat fox.
Yeah, he is
it's pretty
tubular
much the
right
cutest
now.
Dog in existence.
He's really calm too. He's actually been here between us this whole time.
Yeah, he's kind of standing in between our tower of mics right now, just doing nothing.
I wonder if you could get him to make a noise.
He's always been really calm.
I don't think I've ever heard him make a noise.
He's made noises before. If you just hold his hand long enough, he'll start to squeal really loud.
Like out of joy?
I think he's a little... No, out of really... Oh, he's nibbling me gently. Now he's trying to lick me.
He's just too tame.
He's too somewhere... Yeah, he's too somewhere new, but...
Anyway, tell us how you got him.
Yeah, so to get a Shiba Inu, obviously they're from Japan. I don't know too much about the history, but as far as I know, they're pretty recent to coming to America and different countries, you know, but there's a lot of breeders now. And I was researching getting a dog, and my roommates had a Shiba Inu, and I really liked their dog, and I thought it was really cool. And they were like, if you're going to get a dog, you know, we'd recommend a Shiba Inu. Obviously, we have one, but we know they'll get along. And I kind of had an idea of what to expect about the temperament. And so I looked up breeders, and there's like a breeder in Washington State, and there's a breeder in like Portland, Eugene, maybe Corvallis. But those were the kind that don't always have litters. And so you like pay like $1,000, and next spring you're guaranteed to pick one of the puppies. And the breeder that my friend got, she had a litter of puppies that were born. All of the orange ones sold. All of the black ones sold. I think Kong and his other white brother were the only ones left. And they were half price. They were discounted. They were $700 instead of, well, like $1,250. I'll tell you why. discount. Like, no one adopted him. He's a cute white one. And his name was Charlie. And it was Christmas time. He was born October 8th, I think I found out. But she took, like, Christmas promos when he was a few weeks old. And that's when I found. And she was in Minnesota. So you buy a dog from Minnesota. You pay the $700. You pay, like, $100 for a crate fee. And then it was, like, $250 for a plane ticket to fly my dog to me to Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
And so his date came along. And me and my roommates went up with their Shiba Inu. And my one other friend, and we went to the airport, and if anyone's been to PDX in and out of it, you're about like a mile away from the actual airport where you come in and, you know, like there's drop off and baggage claims just right there. You're about like a mile, about half a mile down the road. There's this weird cargo area, and it's like, you know, like, package and pet pickup. And there's like weird like fighter jets flying in and out like when we went there.
I don't think I've ever been there.
Yeah, it was just in, it's just like this small office, like small, you know, literally like 15 by 20 foot office. You know, we park there, no one else is there. We go in. I think I had like a paper or something about his flight and itinerary with me and presented it to him. And we got there like, 10 minutes early. We were pretty good timing, like, to when his flight was supposed to arrive. You know, anyone that's picked someone up, and it's the same way with a dog. Like, you have an itinerary, you have a plane number, flight number, you know when they're going to arrive, whatnot. And so we got there, like, 10 minutes early, maybe even, like, 8, like, pretty good on time, because we stopped to eat when we were really close and timed it really good. And I presented their thing, like, Kong, and they, like, look, like, oh, I'm sorry, his flight was delayed.
His flight was delayed.
And my heart just, like, sank. I was like, because I was, like, so ready to, like, pick up my puppy. And it's weird, like, with a child, like, it's, like, kind of like the 9-month pregnancy. Like, I paid for him. I knew he was going to come. I picked out his name, Kong. I had, you know, like...
You painted his room back home all blue.
Yeah, I painted his room. I tattooed Kong on my forehead. I sacrificed a few other dogs for him. Like, you know, I did all the normal parent stuff. Blasphemed any other dog I saw walk by. And so my heart sank. And then, like, it was like 40-minute or 30-minute delay. And so we went to some weird chili dog place, coincidentally. And me and Garrett ate, like, a corn dog. And then we went back. And she's like, oh, yes, he's finally here. And they bring him up in this little cage. And I realize, like, they have to have enough to, like, sit and turn around. But that's basically all he had. And there's, you know, like, pee and, like, poo in there. Because, you know, he flew from Minnesota. And they
yeah,
had, like, a lot, like, it's just, it was just all, like, wet and moist. And like open the thing, and he was kind of like holding back a little bit, but he's super gentle and super shy, which is how she just described him, and that's how he was. And I pulled him out, and once I got him out of the cage, he just like leaned up against me and just didn't move. And he was small and teeny, and I was kind of encapsulated by that whole moment. We get in the car, you know, put the cage in the back, and he's just laying against me. And then Kiwi, my roommate's dog, like makes a jingle like you might hear right now, because he just crawled underneath. He like commandoed underneath my chair to sniff the like naked girl poster Ethan has on the wall. He hears the jingle and he kind of perks up when he sees the other Sheba, and like that's when he's kind of looking around, and that's when I like observe him. I'm like, hold on, you guys, hold the rope, like stop gunning it down the highway. All over his body are just bald spot scab, like festering wounds everywhere. I'm like, there's like a huge one right on like his forehead next to his eye, and two bad ones on his ankles and like his body. I'm like, do we have to like sue the airline? Like abuse? Like what is this? I was like, so we called the breeder, and we're like, you know, is this you or did this happen in flight? Like he has just like scabs and like bald patches all over his body. And she's like, oh yeah, his sister was like rough. She just, you know, she bit him a whole bunch. I was like, he, you know, he doesn't have any food allergies. She's like, no, it's just his sister was kind of a bully. You know, he was the shy one. And so she bit him a whole bunch.
But why do you think he was discounted?
I don't know.
It didn't say.
She didn't say. Apparently he was
on sale
because,
for a reason.
Yeah, he was half off because he was Gollum. Which luckily he completely healed besides his back right ankle. It is like, it's like human skin, just like a small little nugget sized patch.
But you really can't notice anything.
You never notice. It's a distinguishing mark too. Like if anyone jacked him, I'd be like, he has a scar there, you jerk.
It's kind of like buying a car. Like, if there's any like body damage, the value goes way down, even though it runs just as good.
Oh yeah, which apparently, and I think the other thing too, like he just hadn't been claimed, so she was probably getting a lot of people that were locally buying them. I can only guess that she probably gets way more people that buy their dogs locally go in. Oh, the cute, not mangled one. Like I'm gonna claim that one. Yeah. So like poor Kong just didn't get chosen. And apparently he wasn't the runt because he's like 33 pounds now, which is massive for a Sheba. My roommate Sheba that I mentioned, Kiwi, she's 17 pounds right now. Wow. She's full grown.
But she's way feistier.
She is way feistier. And so is Kong's half brother, who they just recently adopted, who's black and is super feisty.
You have a family of Shiba Inus.
We do have a family of Shiba Inus. They all came from the same person.
Would you recommend people buy a Sheba?
I would recommend previous dog owners to buy a Shiba Inu, or someone that isn't an idiot, I guess. I mean, any dog. I wouldn't recommend anyone to get a dog unless they want to be a dog person.
So yeah. If you know you're an idiot, don't buy a dog.
Basically. So you're probably going to buy one because you're an idiot and you're not going to know you're an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
I would recommend them for this, for these reasons. Like I said, you know, they're a medium-sized dog, so they're not a small, yappy dog. They look like bigger dogs. You know, they look like a, you know, a fox or like a mini wolf. You know, they have like the proportions of like arm and body and, you know, like chest of like, you know, a lab, a German shepherd, you know, a husky. Like they have that, you know, like shape to them. So they look cool. But, you know, I can pick him up with one arm. I can hold him if I need to. He gets in my car really easily. He doesn't eat as much as a huge dog. So his like size to look ratio is great. Everyone says that Shibas are pretty quiet. And he almost doesn't bark at anything besides a cardboard box that appears out of nowhere. But, yeah, they're really quiet. They, you know, they just, they don't bark or yap. And then their temperament, people describe them as like cat-like temperament. So they're really in, as we speak, he's like licking and cleaning himself. So they're very independent, do their own thing. Like I get home from work and he's not like lab. He's not going to run out and like lick you. And then you lay down, like sit on your lap, like me, you were gone all day, like lick, lick, lick. Like I get home from work, open the door, and nothing. Go back to my bedroom. He's like curled facing the wall, and he just like turns around and just like scrunch mug face, just like, and then like goes back to sleep.
He's over it.
But you know, like when I leave, people watching him are like, you know, he sits by the door and he kind of whines, and you can tell he's kind of like uneasy. So like he really loves me, and I'm his master, but he's independent. He doesn't kind of a need thug. To be on you all the time. Yeah,
he is kind of a thug. I've seen him smoking a few times when you were gone. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now. What are you working on, and where do you work, and what projects do you have?
I am writing a screenplay, a Western, actually. I don't really have a title for it, but I just call it Vincent and Simon because it's about two outlaws that are named Vincent and Simon. Yeah, so it's about two outlaws. I was inspired by the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. Film.
They have way cooler names than Vincent and Simon.
Yeah.
I don't know. The first time I heard the Sundance Kid, yeah, the I was Sundance like, Kid's what? I don't. Cool. I told my dad, I was like, I don't want to watch that movie, the Sundance Kid.
Yeah.
I was like picturing like an interpretive dancer like, oh, you know, dancing in the sunrise or something.
Literally,
like that.
You took that literal.
Well, I mean, his name also was Kid, and I watched it pretty young. And yeah, I'm and like, he's not a kid, he's a man.
You don't get it, son. It's Robert Redford. Who's Robert Redford? Like, you don't know. I was like a kid.
The Sundance
like,
Kid
Paul Newman.
Was like 34, 35 or like something.
Well, they were like, I watched, so me and my friend went and watched Sundance Kid in December. TMC 10th anniversary released it in theaters, and holy crap, it was cool. It still holds up. It is honestly one of my favorite movies of all time. But why I like it is you have a little bit of story, you have a little bit of exposition, you get to know the characters, and then boom, they're on the run from the law. And the whole movie, they are on the run from the law. There's like a good like 30 minute of like almost no dialogue. There's no music. It's just quiet. It's like them running through the desert and jumping off the cliffs, you know, and like eventually, you know, like they get off their horses, they get on foot, and they're just being chased. And like the constant tension of like the buildup, you know, of like being chased was like so fascinating to me. And so this one that I'm writing is like, I took it even more so to like a larger scale. Like I said, there's a little bit of story at the beginning. You establish, like, these guys are robbers. They're just finishing a robbery. And then they go to do another one. Or one of the guys goes to do another one. And the other guy comes back from Mexico after doing jobs there with a bunch of money. And they meet while the sheriff's coming after the one guy. You know, they help each other get out. But the sheriff brings in more people. It's sort of like, you know, you press your luck too far. Sort of like in Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. And from Act 1, like, middle of Act 1... through Act 2, they're trying to escape the whole time. They're trying, and I thought, I was like, you know, maybe they'll get to Mexico, maybe they'll do some stuff in a town, things will happen. I'm like, no. I don't think they should ever actually make it to Mexico, or maybe all of them. Like, they're being chased by the sheriff and just trying to get there. And their greed, and like, wanting, like, halfway through, they're like, we don't have any money. So they come up with this great idea to rob a train. And like even that like puts him back, and so eventually the one guy gets caught, and the other two people ride off to Mexico, and they're like, oh, maybe we should go back, and like they go back and help him, and yeah, so it's just like the whole like thing is like a constant like chase. But I was also, so like the other stuff that I was inspired by was like District 9. I forgot the main character's name, but you started out and you think like, man, this guy is an asshole, right? He goes, you know, I don't know if you guys seen
it's
District
an alien
9.
Movie, right?
Yeah, so he goes through.
He turns into an alien. It's lovely.
Yeah, so he goes through, and at the very beginning, he like checks in on the basically refugee camps, the alien camps, and he like gets mad at people, and he writes fines, and he takes people off away to prison, and you're like, man, this guy is an asshole. And then same kind of thing, like, yeah, he's slowly turning into an alien. People are turning on him, and then you slowly like start sympathizing and rooting for him. You're like, oh, I'm on this guy's side. And so
you have to change the audience.
Yeah, so I was fascinated on that, and that's kind of happening a lot, I guess. But I'm genuinely fascinated in it. It's not like I'm jumping on any train here, but you know, like I guess Breaking Bad didn't necessarily like make you like him near the end. Like, you kind of just hate him more and more. But, yeah, like, that anti-hero, like, so, like, they, like, they both find redemption. So, like, I start out by having one of them kill, like, a rancher's son, like, in defense. So, you're like, wow, this guy, like, shot, you know, like, a young man, kid. You know, like, I obviously hate him. And then the other guy cheats on or sleeps with his best friend's wife. So, they both did two really bad things within, like, the first 10 minutes of the film. But then from that point on, when they're being chased, the chasing is like they're forced to face themselves, and they're both forced to face redemption, and they can either choose, you know, redemption or death, basically. And
when you're writing something, do you know what the ending is going to be?
Oh, yeah, I have the whole thing. So I do the beat notes and the treatment. Like, I kind of do the beat notes in my mind, which for people that are listening, for like a movie screenplay, let's say, let's take a movie that everyone knows. Okay, Princess Bride. No, maybe not. It's like Princess Bride. So, you know, help her on farm. Act one, help her on farm. Gets away. You know, goes away. Girl gets kidnapped. He comes back to help her. You know, like, they run off together. He fights three guys. She, you know, he gets captured, and she's engaged to married. He gets help getting escaped. Like, you're like, really, like, you're like, they're just the beats, like, these are kind of the basic things that happen in the story. And I just kind of think as I'm working or walking around, I just kind of get those different beat notes and different interesting things that happen. And then you do the treatment, which is like, it can be a scene to scene breakdown. It can be like anywhere from like a 10, it's like an essay, like a 10 page to like one page, like breakdown of basically everything that's happening. And then you have the actual spec script, which is dialogue and action, like a full, like, someone can look at this and make a movie out of it, basically, kind of thing. And so it really helps. And I didn't do it the first time when I wrote something, but all the serious stuff I have now, I write a full treatment, and I just write, you know, act one, and I write scene one, exterior or interior, you know, Simon's house, daytime. And then I write the basic premise of what's happening, and then I do the next scene. And when you finish that, you can just go through and write, and you have that to fall back on, and you get the whole story, and it helps you think about it. And then you get, like, you do get a lot of gold, and you get a lot of treasures while just writing it out, because you're not writing every piece of dialogue, you're not writing everything, but you have a pretty good treatment of what's happening. So yeah, I definitely know, like, I know exactly how it ends. I could tell you. I'm at like page 50 right now.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I can't wait to read it.
So you got like another 40 pages?
I'm anticipating, yeah. So you want to get 90 pages or 100. So every screenplay that you look at, if it's going to be taken seriously, is in Courier. It has certain margins.
The font.
The certain Courier font, yeah. Certain. I think it's 12 point. I have obviously the software that does it for me, so I hadn't paid attention for a little bit. But so that every page is the equivalent to like 1 minute of shooting. So you have 90 pages. That's an hour and a half, a typical movie. This one's probably going to be 120. So 2 hours, cool. I'm guessing, until I like cut it down. But 2 hours is kind of the standard. So like, oh, there's a lot that are 120, but
It's an interesting project, you know, to be always working on something like that, you know. I've kind of found that like most things, even just like you're telling me about screenwriting, is like you start with kind of the structure, you know what I mean? Like, even if you're, if you're painting, you start with like, you know, just the basic colors, and you kind of evolves from there.
Yeah, I was actually, to bring it back around to Kong, I was working on a canvas that we're gonna do for our wedding, where it's the, you know, like a Kong, like his fat Kong face, and it's gonna be like coloring book style, and we're gonna have paints, you like fill in a section of it, and he's commando crawling again. And so, yeah, exactly the same process. I got the picture. I literally took a ruler and I marked out inches. I drew lines. I made a grid on the reference I was using, and I made a grid on the canvas I was using. And then you outline it, and then you fill it in. Like, and I've, like I said, you know, I did a lot of art classes. I've done a lot of like art creating things, and it is so much easier to create something when you start from the base level, like writing out the outline, you know, than taking it, you know, one step at a time. If you just, you know, like, and it could be really therapeutic, and I'd recommend anyone to, you know, like, just start writing a novel or whatever, you know what I mean? That may never be the one that you finish or publish. It's really good experience to just write something. So that's what I did with my first screenplay. I'm just like, what's going to come out of me? So I just started, writing.
Yeah, you know, you have to do that, because if you want to be good at something, it has to build from somewhere. Like, I heard some writers tell me that before, like, no matter what, if you're going to be a writer, if you're going to write books, you're going to have to write your first book.
Oh, yeah.
And every single writer, like, loves to look back at their first book and think, like, oh, my gosh, you know, I used to
do this. Such an idiot.
Yeah, such a stupid idiot. But, like, no matter what, if you've never written a book, you have to write your first book somehow. So it's, like, it's good to just get it out of you, like, rip it out of you, get your first book. And, I mean, it could be great, but at least you'll have that down, you know, and everything's like that.
Get it out of the way.
Everything's like that. You got to, like, do it. And you got to be okay with doing it wrong or doing it not as good first, but it's got to build from there. People don't want to start things if they don't think it's going to be the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
Well, that's what I was like. That kind of explains how I felt about college. You're asking, like, you know, what was that like? You know, I did think it was impossible, because it's like, you know, like, what did you think about when you started writing your first book? It's like, that's not impossible until I just started doing it. So it's that, you know, it's that same thing. Like, it is impossible until you start doing it. I can't just, like, a screenplay doesn't just fall on my lap. You have to do it. And that's the hardest part, is to just do it.
Yeah. What did we say? It was like building a bridge. Like, most people have an idea, which is like, you know, they want to build a bridge, and they're like, oh, but I don't have enough bricks. I don't have enough.
Yeah.
I don't know how to build a bridge. I need to find the perfect spot. It's like, the bridge is never going to get built unless you take the blocks that you have and you start just laying them.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you've got a big chunk of the bridge, and then you get excited about it, and then you have a different idea, and you're like, oh, I can use this for support and stuff like that. And, you know, it becomes something. It has to become something. I feel like writing is a huge...
Oh, yeah.
Well, and follows that rule exactly.
And we're moving to LA after we get married here from Oregon, and it's that same idea. Like, I could have, you know, lined up an agent, you know, I'm thinking about it and talking to people, but, you know, like, I could have an agent lined up, you know, perfectly. I could wait until I got an offer on a spec script or something. I could, you know, like, wait till I had a movie, like, sold a script or whatever. But kind of like you said, like, I'm just going to go, and it kind of lights a fire underneath your feet. And with my personality, like, I need that fire underneath my feet. It is going to be more productive for me in this case to just take the first step of going somewhere where it's going to be a lot easier to, you know, to meet people, to have agents, to get meetings, than to, like, make sure everything was perfect. Like, well, I got to have, like, the job. I got to have the place to live. And I got to, you know, like, make sure, like, I'm established. And it's like, that is what I'm doing. This is the first step. You know, people are saying, like, well, have you know, like, done anything yet? It's like, I mean, no, you know, Warner Bros. Hasn't, you know, filmed one of my movies yet, but yeah, I'm writing scripts. I'm in the middle of another script now. Like, I am, and then I'm gonna move. Like,
oh yeah.
Sometimes the first steps are, they're transparent. Sometimes you can't see the first steps of doing things, and people misinterpret, you know, the first three steps and go straight to step 10, and oftentimes that just makes you fall off and makes it impossible. Like, why aren't you just, you know, why aren't you the lead in Star Wars right now? It's like, well, I'm going to start by just, you know, like, telling funny stories to my friends, or, you know what I mean? Like, making YouTube videos of myself or whatever. Or of other people. It kind of sounds weird.
LA's going to be a great place to be vegan, too.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
You guys are vegan buds, huh?
Yes, we are. Vegan workout buddies.
That's rare.
We do CrossFit. You should join CrossFit.
Vegan CrossFit? No, we don't do CrossFit.
No, CrossFit is a cult, officially. I think we hit the 2-hour mark, didn't we?
No.
It feels like it sometimes. You're out.
We talked for like 20 minutes before Paul even showed up.
I did like our conversation, though.
You're out.
The Tigger's Revenge was hilarious.
I'll cut like the very last bit into the podcast.
I feel like this needs to be a part two, actually. And we can get some... I think we should part two this one, because...
Oh, yeah. We have lots more questions.
I have some more cool stuff to talk about, but I shall...
We want to hear some stories, you know, from you, and it was good to know about, you know, what it's like graduating college, you know, because I think there's going to be a lot of people that are, in college and wondering what's going to happen afterwards. And there's also going to be a lot of people that are thinking about going to college and, you know, anybody who writes or does anything creative, I think, you know, has, can relate to, to you and stuff. So,
yeah, often I've heard like, oh, you know, trade schools are better if, you know, like, don't go to college if you're going to get an English degree. That's what so many people told me. Like, that's like, if you're just going to get an English degree, just don't go to college. And it's like, wait a second, that's kind of really counterintuitive. Like, in my, you know, to bring it back to there, our steps and our processes and, you know, like, getting connected with people, like, I wrote so, like, I was forced to write, you know, essays, write creative things. I was forced to do work that made me better. So you're right. I, you know, like a business degree, I didn't have to do an internship, and therefore that internship led into a job. But I have 4 years of experience that made me a better person and a writer that's going to manifest itself into, you know, my, you know, like, my getting work and whatnot. It's not even necessarily something I can put on my resume, but it's something that someone will see reflected in my work when they read it.
Yeah.
Which is almost better, you know, if you're doing something in the arts or something creative.
But what do you think we should title this episode of you?
Tigger's Revenge. If we can. It might have to be Tiger's Revenge.
Yeah, I don't know if we have the rights, though.
Kong's Revenge.
T-I-G hyphen G-E-R. Tigger's Revenge.
T-I-double-G-E-R.
T-I-double-G-E-R.
Revenge. Just spell that all out.
Missing the first steps, I think. I think that's what I got out of this. Like, and talking helps me remember some stuff. Like, missing the first steps is definitely a big thing. Like, well, college was one of the first steps. Like I said, the beat notes was one of the first steps. Just going somewhere where you know whatever what you want to do is easier to do is a first step. And people miss the first steps. And it, and then they're and then they're on step 10, but it's of a different life they wanted. You know, they have kids and they're somewhere doing something they don't want. You know, they skip forward to step 10. Woo, you skipped all these steps, but you're on a different step program now.
Well, I think we're going to title each episode like I, something like I count cards. So yours could
be. Oh, wow. Thanks for telling me.
Yours could be I took my first step.
That's dumb. What is this?
I think we'll put it and it'll be like Tom, I took my first steps. You know, like it'll be the name of the person. And like,
how about Tom, I wrote a screenplay.
They're going to think.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Or I became a vegan.
We didn't talk about that at all.
Yeah, that'd be a little misleading.
I know. I think you. I could. I think you should do like I got a writing degree, even like because there is so much stigma out there about. Like I said, like if you know if you're gonna go to university, don't get a writing degree because that's gonna be worthless. And it's like, yeah.
Okay, I got a worthless degree.
Yeah, no, that's no. That will bring people in, and it's true. I technically do. Have a worthless degree. I mean, it's worth what, like $13,500 right now. But
that's how much.
Yeah, you're a student. You're a, like a music production major. Like that's why pretty worthless,
to
man.
Trade school.
Yeah. Why didn't you? Why didn't you just start doing it? Why didn't you just jump to step 10 and start doing it?
We can talk about trade school.
I'm probably gonna go to trade school next, actually.
Yeah, but you didn't skip the first step.
Yeah. There you go.
So, right. Okay, come you and go home.
All right. Thanks for coming.
Bye.
Have a good night. Bye, Kong.
Tigger's a wonderful thing. Up the man in the river.